Show me the money.
This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rake Fanica.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Be a Better Investor podcast. My name is Rake van Niekerk, and in this podcast series, I speak to leading professional investors. We speak about their investment journeys. We look at their first investments they have made. We look at their investment strategies and how it changed over the years. And we also take a peek into their personal portfolios to see whether they practice what they preach. And the idea is to identify a few golden nuggets of wisdom to help amateur retail investors to become better investors. My guest today is Varshan Maharaj. He's a portfolio manager at Allan Gray. He is a CA and a CFA charter holder. He joined Allan Gray in 2014 and became a portfolio manager in 2020. Varshan, thank you so much for your time today. Let's start with your background. Where did you grow up, and did you ever dream of becoming a professional investor while you were at school?
Good day, Rick. Thank you very much for the privilege of speaking to you. In terms of my background, I grew up in a small part of Durban named Clare Estate. I was fortunate to go to a great school named Westville Boys High School. And after that, I studied at UCT, a business science degree. And just in terms of my background, I have a very competitive nature. I like reading, learning about new things and how things work. And I also like stand-up comedy. I think stand-up comedians are one of the last truth tellers in society. And you can get a lot of insights by watching stand-up comedians. In terms of my first exposures to investing, my interest in investing really began as an interest in businesses. And when I was very young, I spent a lot of time with my dad, and he has an auditing practice in Durban for about 40 years now. So I would spend a lot of time with his clients, and they would speak about challenges facing their businesses, strategies, and so on. And I also joined a golf club in Durban when I was about 11 years old. So spending Sundays with the members of the golf club speaking about their businesses, that really gave me a great interest in business. And that naturally into an interest in the markets and trading shares.
It sounds logical that if your father had an auditing firm or an accounting firm, you would take the same route, and which you did. You became a CA. But it's interesting to me that many CAs leave the accounting industry and the auditing industry to pursue a career in investments, because that is not always a natural migration. So tell us about that decision and how it came about.
That's a great question, Rick. I think auditing, one needs a very specific type of personality to enjoy auditing. It's very rule-based, and some people enjoy that, and all the best to them. But from my perspective, I have a lot of intellectual curiosity. And even in varsity, I had identified investments as a field that I would like to get into. Because when you're participating in markets, it is a contest of ideas. And it's extremely intellectually stimulating work. And working in investments, you never have a dull day. You're always working with interesting people who are running interesting businesses. And as I mentioned, I'm a very competitive person. So when you're in markets, it's about the most competitive thing you can do. And I think once you start investing and you have your first taste of success, your first investment where you've made a gain, it's a very satisfying and addictive feeling. So it sort of pushes you on to study more and learn more about the markets.
When did you make your very first investment?
Sure. So I finished my articles in about early 2013, and that was the first investment that I made. And it wasn't one particular share. I had invested in a basket of small caps. So based on what I had studied while at university and doing the CFA curriculum, I had seen quite a few studies where small cap value and small cap growth stocks had outperformed various markets over various time frames in many different countries. So I thought that would be a good place to start. And I bought a basket of small caps. Some of them were businesses like Afgri, John, Verimark, Mustek, and so on. And many of them did quite well. Some were bought out at large premiums. And there were a few failures, two that I had, which went almost to nil, were African Bank and a business named RBA Homes. And I think some of the lessons that I learned from that was the relative size of your winners and losers matters a lot. So if you have a few companies that you invest in, which go up 5 or 10 times, that can make up for many companies where you lose 30 to 60% of your investment, let's say. And also the importance of position sizing was driven home. And I think I was fortunate to start with small investments and then increase the amount invested as I built up my own track record. And the idea of picking a basket of small caps, I think that's a very effective tool that investors can use. So if you identify an investment theme that you would like to take advantage of, you should pick a basket of stocks and play it in that way. Other examples that I've used in my investing career was I shorted a basket of stocks, SA-focused stocks, during Ramaphosa in 2018 or 19. And in 2020, 2021, coming out of the lockdown, there was expectations that inflation would pick up. I picked a few stocks which I thought would benefit from rising inflation, businesses like ArcelorMittal, PPC and Hulamin, and those have worked out quite well also.
I've spoken to many professional investors over the years, and it seems as if most professional investors would accept if they can pick 6 winners out of 10 investments. So 6 companies that perform well and 4 that does not perform well or lose money. What do you think of that ratio? Would you also agree to that?
That's a great question, Rick. I think as a rule of thumb, 6 out of 10 is a good starting point. But it also depends on your strategy. So there are famous investors such as Nassim Taleb, who follows a very different strategy where when he loses money on trades, it tends to be small amounts. And when he makes money, he makes massive amounts on a single trade. He sort of bets on anti-fragile assets. So it depends on the relative size of your winners and losers. In the case of investors such as Mr. Taleb, when your winners are 10 or 20 or 30 baggers, you can get away with a lower win ratio of, let's say, 3 or 4 times, because those very big winners make up for many losses. But for investors that are running their portfolio in a more conservative manner, which includes myself, I think 6 out of 10 is a good sort of metric to aim for.
Yeah, and then the key is, as you've said, those 6 need to perform really, really well, and the 4 losers should not lose too much money. And I think that is the skill. I just want to come back to a previous comment you've made regarding your competitive nature. Because a competitive nature is I don't know if that is a positive attribute to be a professional investor, because I believe a good attribute would be to be patient. And if you are very competitive, it may clash with a patient type of approach. Just to add to that, how do you react, or what do you do when one of the investments you have made loses money?
So I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. I think you can be competitive and patient as well. As I mentioned, I made my first investment in 2013, and I still hold some of those stocks in my personal portfolio. And in terms of competitive, I think every investor needs to have an investment approach, philosophy, or strategy. And in terms of competitiveness, you can keep on making incremental improvements to that. That's one way in which I express my competitiveness. And when you're managing money, most of the time you're managing relative to a benchmark. So in terms of being competitive, keeping an eye on your relative performance and trying to maximize that.
Yeah, that is interesting and a very good approach. You're still very young, but if you could go back to when you've made your first investment, would you give yourself advice to do things differently?
Sure. Thanks for calling me young, Rick. I appreciate it. I think when speaking to younger friends and family members, a lot of them battle to stick to the process of investing and keep their discipline. So I think the first thing a young investor should do is to realize these truths, which I first heard from Warren Buffett. He basically said, if you spend less than you earn and you earn a decent return on the money that you invest and you continue to do that for a long time, it's inevitable that you will get rich over a long period of time. So I think the first step is to accept those truths, and it helps you stick to your process in that way. The second thing I would say is get a mentor, preferably more than one. I personally been fortunate to have several mentors, and they add a great deal of value to my investing and to my life in general. And young investors should focus on reading. So before I joined the investment industry, I did read, but I wasn't reading anywhere close to enough. So read as much as you can about a wide variety of topics. And for youngsters, the best way to learn about yourself and learn about the world in general is to travel abroad. So I know it's not possible for everyone, but prioritize traveling as much as you can. And also pick an investment philosophy that's proven to work. So at Allen Gray, we use a value-based contrarian philosophy, and it has been proven to work over many decades, over many markets. And you need to pick a philosophy that suits your personality as well. And perhaps the last thing I would say, many investors are sort of conservative people. They worry a lot about protecting the downside, which is important. But one thing that I try to do more and more is make an effort to think about what could go right in an investment. So often we look at growth companies or quality companies, maybe listed in the US, and they trade on 25 or 30 times earnings. And one may think that's a very rich multiple to pay. But if they can grow earnings in US dollars at 10 or 15% per annum for 10 years or more, those businesses can still be bargains. So protect the downside, but also focus on what can go right in a business.
You refer to mentors, preferably more than one, and I agree with you. That is absolutely critical. Tell us about the mentors you have had.
Sure. So from early on in my life, my dad was my first and still my greatest mentor. And working at Allen Gray, the chief investment officer of Allen Gray and of Orbis also have added tremendous value to my investing journey. And also colleagues that I've met since I started working at Allen Gray 10 years or so ago have added a great deal to my investment philosophy. And for a young person starting out in investing, I think you sometimes feel intimidated to approach a more senior person. And I also was that way when I first started. But I think many knowledgeable and experienced people are more than happy to share what they've learned if you approach them. And I think for senior people as well, we have a responsibility to assist and guide those younger than us. Because I think for a young person, nothing is more motivating than having someone who's senior to you, who's achieved something that you are striving to achieve. If a person like that takes an interest in you, it's very motivating. So I think we should all look for mentors. And if we are older or more established individuals, we should seek for younger people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the big lessons you can learn from mentors is which mistakes to avoid, because mistakes can be very, very expensive. And we will get to your mistakes in a minute. But tell us about your own personal investment portfolio. What is your strategy and what have you invested in recently?
With the investment approach, as I mentioned, it's always a work in progress and I always try to make incremental improvements to it. But my broad strategy is, overall, I would always like to buy assets. So my first step is to figure out how much is a share worth, and then you want to pay much less than that. And I look for opportunities with positive asymmetry. What I mean by that is the upside potential is much more than the downside potential. And when putting my portfolio together, I don't simply choose the 10 cheapest shares that I come across. I like to own a mix of cyclical businesses, stable growers, and secular winners. And from studying other investors and studying the history of markets, I found that having an allocation to gold and gold miners does tend to work out well over the long term. So I always keep an allocation to gold and gold miners. And one of the investors that I admire and follow is Stanley Druckenmiller. And he always says that one should imagine what the world would look like 2 or 3 years from now, and then look at what current asset prices are and make your buy and sell decisions based on that. So that's sort of a special situation sort of bucket that I look at. An example would be a commodity that's going from a surplus to a deficit. So an example would be in the Allen Gray Frontier Fund. We invested in a uranium miner called Kazatomprom a number of years ago when uranium market was in surplus, and it's since gone into deficit. So when a commodity goes from surplus to deficit, the commodity price itself goes up tremendously in most instances. Another example of a special situation is when an illiquid company starts buying back their shares in material amounts, it can result in a large increase in the share price. On the JSE, there have been a few examples, companies like Mastech. And then if I cast my mind to the US market, I had also bought in my personal portfolio some shares in Smith & Wesson based on a similar argument. And that has worked out well to date. And maybe the last thing I would say is to look at alternative valuation metrics. So, for example, a company like Southern Sun, which is listed on the JSE, in 2020, they had to shut down all of their hotels. So there was no earnings number to look at. And in 2021, earnings were still normalizing because they were still operating under heavy restrictions. So traditional measures such as price to earnings ratios weren't that helpful. So you had to look at alternative metrics. One that we looked at was the enterprise value per room, and we compared that to the new build cost. So for example, at the bottom, it was trading somewhere in the region of 300,000 Rand enterprise value per room. And the new build cost is something like 2 or 3 million Rand per room. So we took that as an indication that there was great value in Southern Sun. And that investment has worked out quite well since then.
Yeah, it's been phenomenally successful. I just want to say the Frontier Fund, you've referred to it. You are the manager of that fund at Allan Gray. Just lastly, and these are the two questions most listeners are waiting for. First of all, let's start with the worst investment you have ever made. Tell us which one are you not very proud of and cost you a lot of money.
So there's a few that come to mind. The one that I'll mention is ArcelorMittal. So I had bought that in January 2021 at about 130 cents per share, I think the level was. And as I mentioned earlier, I had done the exercise if inflation had to increase, which sort of shares would benefit. And that was one of the shares that I identified. And initially, it was a good investment. 1 year later, it was up almost eightfold. But I did a few mistakes on that investment. It was a lack of discipline on my part. I kept changing my investment thesis and my fair value estimate as the share price rose. And I didn't take any profits. I should have sold some of that with the benefit of hindsight, or maybe sold all of it at a much higher price. And currently, it's trading a bit below my cost price. But I think it's wrong to anchor to your initial cost of an investment. A more accurate way would be to look at the drawdown from the peak, which is about 90% down from the peak. So that's one of the mistakes that I made. And I've looked at it, I've considered it, and I've taken the learnings that I can to try and prevent from committing the same errors in future. I think that's a critical part for investing that all investors should do.
Yeah, absolutely. Learn from mistakes. That could be very, very valuable indeed. And the best one, which one are you the most proud of?
The one that comes to mind was Gold Fields. So I had bought Gold Fields, you know, it was around 45 Rand a share in 2014. And at the time, many famous investors were very bearish on gold. Many investors were referring to it as a pet rock. And the gold price at the time was about 1,200 or 1,300 US dollars per ounce. And there was a lot of negativity about how challenging it would be to mine in South Africa and so on. But I had a positive outlook on gold. The one is because looking at the history of markets, I thought it's a good investment to have. And also looking at the extent of money printing and geopolitical tensions at the time, which have only gotten worse since then, I thought that gold would be a good place to invest. And at the recent highs, it was almost a 10-bagger. It's pulled back a bit. It's been a good investment. And at the time, I mentioned I like to, when I spot a good investment theme, I like to use a basket approach. So I'd also bought shares in Harmony Gold, Anglo Gold, and the GLD ETF at the time, which have also done well. That's one investment that I'm happy with.
Well, thank you so much, Vashan, for joining us today and for sharing your insights. Definitely like your approach where you take positions in various companies in one industry, a type of basket approach, as you call it. And that's diversification within a sector, which is a very, very interesting approach. And thank you for sharing that with us.
Thanks, Rick. It's been a privilege to speak to you.
That was Vashan Maharaj. He is a portfolio manager at Allen Gray.
Show me the money. That was The Money Web, Be a Better Investor podcast with Rake Van Niekerk. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the Money Web podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. Money Web, your trusted source for business and investment insights.